It is St. Patrick's Day, and normally where we would be out getting festive, we're working today. So what we decided to do was to bring the festivities into the studio. This is made much easier when I have my colleague Ray Graff to my immediate right. And we also welcome our dear friend, spirits writer Bill Dowd, to the roundtable to help us celebrate in fine fashion. Bill, good morning, and thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning, Joe. It's good to be here, and I brought a bag of festivities with me.
Excellent. And Ray, thank you very much. I know you have more of a German heritage than a Irish heritage.
And there aren't too many German parades, I noticed, through Albany. But you know what? You live.
As the great Bob Newhart joke is that I'm half German and I'm half Irish, which makes me a meticulous drunk.
Ah. Well, all right.
Bill, you're an Irishman.
I am, to a large degree. But the more I get into my genealogy and... the more I dig into a book I'm working on, I found out that I'm probably better described as just being Pan-Gaelic.
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 Sounds
I just made
painful.
That up.
Yeah.
You get shots for that now. But.
Yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of shots, let's take a few.
Okay. All right. he brought his bag, and we'll be half in the bag.
But umpo.
So you're here to talk to us about distilling and also what is really happening nationwide is local distilleries making really great spirits and giving us kind of a comparison.
Right. They are known primarily as craft distillers, which usually just means small, just like a craft winemaker or a craft brewer. But also in New York State, because of the emphasis on trying to use New York products in making other products, we have farm distilleries. Yeah, just as we have farm breweries, farm wineries.
Yeah.
If you use 50% or more New York products to make your product, that's a very broad explanation, but then you are classified as a farm distillery.
And you get tax breaks, presumably, for that.
You do. And it's also part of the marketing. The state, under the Taste New York program, will market the heck out of it.
When you think of that as the setup of all of this great craft going on, what can we learn from this as to how it changes what we drink?
Well, for one thing, you're probably going to be drinking younger spirits when it's craft. And that's a simple economic reason, because to be able to barrel and age spirits and then wait for it to be 8-year-old or 10-year-old or 15-year-old, you've got to have some money.
Have to sell something.
That's right. You have to have some money in your pocket to get through the expenses of the day. So you're going to get things that are, for example, I brought a North Carolina small batch moonshine today, and it's from a distiller called Troy and Sons. And Troy is the name of a woman who started the company, and she is the chief distiller. And it's made from an heirloom corn that purportedly grows only in that part of North Carolina. Disease wiped out most of the strain 15 or 20 years ago. So she's using this, and apparently it's in good enough supply to act as her raw material. So that's a corn whiskey. Then I've got a McKenzie Pure Pot Still whiskey from the Finger Lakes. Finger Lakes Distilling, actually, and the McKenzie happens to be the names of the two non-related partners in that one.
Wow, that's cool.
And got on well with each other, went into business.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And the third that I brought along is the Prohibition edition of Cutty Sark, which is one of the largest blended Scotch whiskies sold in the world. But I brought these for a comparison. Obviously, you folks listening can't see it, but there's a distinct difference in the coloration. The Cutty Sark, the older one, is a little more gold. The McKenzie, which is a little lighter, is kind of a pale yellow. And the Small Batch Moonshine, which is not aged, is pure white. Looks like water, kicks like a mule.
I just want to note that because of our wonderful producer, Sarah LeDuc, we have pictures online. So if you go to wamc.org/roundtable, you can see pictures of the three beverages that we're talking about. So you have a visual to go along with us going,
delicious.
Yes, delicious a lot. So
you can hear the deliciousness of it.
That's right. You can hear the deliciousness. You were talking about, would you like to begin from left to right or?
I think we have to because Ray's starting to twitch a little. So
you know what? I did not, come in here for the abuse.
Okay. Billy,
where do you usually go for it?
Well, across the street, actually.
Billy's been doing that since about, Well, since the panel started, actually.
All right. Well, we'll begin with the Troy and Sons Small Batch Moonshine. This is 80 proof, which means 40% alcohol. That's the easy way to remember it. Whatever the proof is, divide it in two, and that's the alcohol percentage.
Right.
And as always, nose it first.
Okay. Now, you brought moonshine before, and it didn't go over too well with Joe and myself.
It did not. That's why I brought this one, which I promise is much better.
Right.
I promise.
Okay. The nose is certainly making me optimistic.
All right. He's drinking there.
Take a little sip, roll it around on the tongue so you hit all the flavor parts, and voila. Is that not
You know it's not bad.
Pretty good?
It's not bad.
It is not bad. Now, let me ask you the question. As you say that out of this comes the fact that we're drinking much younger spirits. Mm-hmm. So this is how old?
This is probably less than a year old.
Okay, less than a year old, mm-hmm. and as you say, clear as water.
Because it's not aged in wood.
So what is it aged in?
It is aged in nothing in particular.
A bathtub?
That's an idea. That may come around again.
So the wood gives the color.
The wood gives the color, much of the flavor, some of the nose.
I thought it was thyme.
Thyme and wood, Joe.
Yeah, thyme and wood.
Yeah, if this stuff just sits in a bottle and doesn't do anything, it's not going to change. That's like I've heard people say, I was cleaning out my grandfather's liquor cabinet after he passed away, and I found a bottle with a date on it. It's 20 years old. So this 20-year-old stuff, I said, what was it at the beginning? He said, it's probably 2-year-old. I said, then it's 2 years old. It does not change. It's not like wine that continues to have a process that it goes through. Once you stop fermenting something, that ends the process.
But
then the wood is the only thing that can change it, unless you throw additives in, which is frowned on.
Okay, but if the wood is the only thing that changes, mm-hmm. and that is the way I always understood it, the moonshine you brought last time, don't remember the brand, don't care, was hideous. This is pretty round. It's a pretty nice taste. It tastes aged, but the aging has nothing to do with it because it's aged presumably in a
this is made
bathtub
better.
Or something.
The key to the thing before going into the wood or not going into the wood is the mash. That's the grain you use. For example, by law, if you're making bourbon, it's not like champagne. It's only champagne if it's made in Champagne, France.
Right.
Bourbon can be made anywhere, but it has to follow certain legal regulations. It has to be 51% or more corn in the mash, and then you usually use rye or barley or something of that sort. And most distillers do 70 to 75 to 80% corn. But again, 51 is the minimum. So that's the mash, and that makes a difference. This particular type of corn that I mentioned for this artisan moonshine is a very prized corn, which is why a couple of farmers in that area of Western North Carolina decided to try to keep the strain alive after the disease hit it because it was good for eating. It was good for distilling. They did a lot of home distilling in that area and still do.
So there's only a little left, so let's just make booze out of it, right?
Well, there is that.
Let's protect the corn that we have. For God's sakes, we have to make
moonshine. Well, a sufficiency of corn is what led to bourbon. And that's because a number of Scotch-Irish settlers in western Pennsylvania moved to, they were lured to what is now Kentucky as an end to the taxation wars that were going on right after we became a country. And when they moved there, they were told they had to plant corn. Well, it turns out that corn was such a bumper crop, they couldn't barter enough of it, they couldn't consume enough of it, and they used to make all their own whiskey out of rye. So they started making it out of corn, and that led to the development of bourbon. So this young moonshine could probably become bourbon if you worked it right.
It's very good.
It is, and Ray is not understating the horribleness of the last moonshine that we had, because that just seemed like something you sprayed into a carburetor to get your mower started.
Well, you amateurs.
And you're complimenting.
Yeah, you amateurs, yes.
Well, this is good.
This is really amateurs. But you agree that this is? Would you agree that this is better than what we had before?
Oh, heavens, yes.
Okay. That's
why
there you go.
That's why I brought it.
All right,
fair enough.
Trying to make good.
I don't know if the other stuff was carburetor related, but you know, do they still have carburetors?
I don't know.
Fuel injector cleaner.
Yeah, well, that's more like it was
whatever
like that.
It is, starting
anyway, the next one is the Mackenzie Pure Pot Still Whiskey. This is from Finger Lakes Distilling. And this is made from malted and unmalted barley mash. There's no corn in this. This is a barley whiskey, and it's also 80 proof, which is what the average distillation is.
So it's fairly light in color.
It is.
And how old is this? How much aging?
This is about 2 years.
Okay.
Which is about the average of what the Finger Lakes Distilling does. Mm. Now, on this one, on my palate, I actually taste more of the grain, in this case the barley mash, than I tasted the corn and the moonshine. So that may go against the grain, so to speak. pause for groaning.
Yes.
That may go against the grain in that you think just because it's aged, it's going to be better. Not necessarily. Between these two, I like the moonshine better.
Agreed.
But the Mackenzie's not bad.
No,
it's a young whiskey, but it's not bad.
It's not bad. And as far as versatility, like does it matter what else you can do with it than just a shot of it? Or?
Well, that depends greatly. I find price point has a lot to do with that. If you spend a lot of money for a spirit, chances are you're going to want to try it straight. You're just going to sip it with maybe a drop of water or an ice cube, because water does help open up many of the spirits for tasting. If you have a less expensive one, you'll probably use that for some kind of cocktail, because there are other flavors that are going to be infused into it. So why spend all that money? For example, my favorite drink is bourbon, and I drink Manhattans quite a lot. Well, I use good old basic Jim Beam, the largest selling bourbon in the world, the white label. That's fine, but I'm not going to drink Jim Beam 8-year-old straight, because it just doesn't taste quite as good. So that's how I say it's an economic issue, I think.
All right. And then we reached to the point.
We have reached Cutty Sark, which is an iconic name in blended Scotch whiskey, which is almost redundant because 3/4 of Scotch whiskey is blended whiskey. This particular one is the Prohibition Edition, which came out last year, and I have not opened it until today in honor of you gentlemen.
And the strange synchronicity. I was outside taking the air not an hour ago.
Yes.
And a liquor truck went by, and it had a big picture of Cutty Sark Prohibition Edition. And I said, you know, I've got to try that. I'm not a blended Scotch fan, but I have to try it. And then Bill shows up
and
with a bottle.
And here it is.
With a bottle. That was actually my car you saw.
Yeah, was it?
Yeah, it was a liquor truck. It just kind of looks that way.
There's St. Patrick, and then there's St. Bill.
Well,
that's right.
Yes.
I try.
All right. So this is the Prohibition Edition. So what caused them to do this?
Well, Prohibition Edition, everything was repeal of Prohibition was a big deal last year, and all kinds of
right.
special things. They put this out because Cutty Sark was one of those rare real whiskeys that was smuggled into the United States during Prohibition. Cutty Sark, Dewar's, Little Johnny Walker, but there were often adulterated versions. And what happened is, this is a little bit of Americana, Scotchicana, a fellow named Captain William S. McCoy, who was a sea captain and smuggler par excellence, smuggled Cutty Sark into the U.S. and guaranteed that it was not adulterated, that it was a real Cutty Sark. And that was giving rise to Cutty Sark being referred to as the real McCoy.
How about that?
That's really cool.
That'll be a dollar, please, for the history lesson.
We'll see if it's any good first.
If there was more Scotchicana on the SATs, I would have done that.
And you wouldn't be in radio today.
That's right.
Drinking Scotch on the air.
Now, the only thing that comes into play when it's a whiskey is if you're trying for the first time, don't ice it up. Some people ice up vodka. They ice up Scotch. And by ice up, I mean actually put it in the freezer to try to make it a little syrupy, which is kind of fun at times. But don't do that when you're trying to get all the notes, because you're not going to get all of them on first taste. And if you're doing a tasting, you're only going to take a sip or two of something.
That's what he says.
I suggest room temperature. This Prohibition Edition of Cutty Sark is 100 proof.
Meh. Oh, now, see, I like that.
Tastes like a blended Scotch to me.
Okay, one meh.
Yeah.
One... I really like it.
I like it.
It's not bad.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I guess that's okay, it. It's so not bad. It's pretty good, though. I like it better than the last one.
Well, I think what happens here is we have something called individual taste. And when I do tastings, I always tell people not to be afraid to say, because everybody's encouraged to say, oh, this tastes of stones and fruit and grass and leaves and car exhaust and all the other silly things that come up. But don't be afraid to say those things, because your individual body chemistry comes into play on what something tastes like to you. That's why people like certain alcoholic beverages, certain foods, certain non-alcoholic beverages. It reacts with their own personal body chemistry. So even though there's a commonality, for example, in bourbon, you pretty much always taste caramel, vanilla, flavors of that sort, some oak. It's because that's so endemic to the particular distillation. But when it comes to a lot of blends and so forth, you're going to get a whole mixed bag of reaction.
Bill Dowd is our guest on the roundtable this morning. He is a spirits expert and a spirits writer, and he is joining us this morning to try several different spirits, and we've been looking at different whiskeys that vary in age.
Now, are we doing this right? I mean, isn't it possible that the fact that we had three tastes of different things without anything to break up, to cleanse the palate, has made us not necessarily like the Cutty Sark that much? Now, I should probably taste
you should probably
just
run
a little bit more.
Run out for lunch and come back. And,
are you asking for a do-over, Ray?
Is yeah, you know what? Because I didn't like it, and I don't think I was fair.
Yeah, that's
let's try it again.
I like
all
the guy
right,
with an equanimity.
All right, Joe.
Try it
again as well.
I wish anyone listening could see the hands waving in front of me, reaching for bottles.
Well,
yeah, it's incredible.
I sense that you've seen this before.
Yeah, pretty much.
I have. There are times when you can't quite see anything if this stuff isn't good, but
okay,
so this is good.
Joe,
now,
you want to see it again, just come back tomorrow
on
the show.
I brought something I'm sure you don't want to try.
Okay.
It's in a little eyedropper type bottle.
Yeah, it looks scary.
And it's Tarlogi spring water. And you notice that it has an odd little shape.
Yes.
And it looks like the kind of thing you might use for nose drops or eye drops. Mm-hmm. What it truly is, Tarlogi spring is in the Speyside area of Scotland. Spey being the name of a river. Speyside is a region, and it's loaded with distilleries. And Glenmorangie, one of the harder to pronounce Scotch distilleries, uses the Tarlogi Spring for its water source. So Dr. Bill Lumsden, who is a brilliant creator of different types of whiskeys, and he's the master distiller and whiskey creator there, sent me this because I told him that nothing tastes as good as Tarlogi Spring water. So now I have a little bottle of it with me. And I've only used a touch of it. And if you don't mind, I'm not going to share it, but I just wanted to point out how important water is to drinking.
Okay.
And sampling in particular. Most people think you're diluting whiskey if you put ice in it or you put water in it and so forth. You're not. You're helping it. Obviously, if you put too much in, then you're diluting it. But if you have, let's say, a half-ounce tasting portion, you put one drop of some kind of clear, filtered water. Not the stuff you get municipally, because that has all the purification chemicals in it, and that'll react poorly. But you put that in, swirl it around a little bit, and try it after you've tried it without the water in it, and you will see a difference. It makes quite a difference. And the
does it make it just a little bit smoother?
It makes it a little more complex.
Ah.
Smoother, perhaps, but it does open up the chemistry.
It's funny you bring this up. Now, ice cubes are an interesting discussion that we often have in the newsroom, believe it or not. And one of our colleagues has ice cubes that are made of stone that he puts in the freezer and then puts them into his Johnny Walker Blue. Should he be using water ice cubes?
Yes. All he's doing is getting it cold. I mean, that's not real ice.
Okay. But would it be better to use an ice cube than a stone, presumably very expensive, stone ice cube?
I say yes, although it's hard to carry an ice cube in your pocket for long, whereas he can carry his stones around.
Okay.
So there's some portability to it.
Fine.
I don't know who you're speaking of, but
you
must be a very practical person.
Now, I find, even at 100 proof, that this is, to me, is quite palatable, not smooth necessarily, but
well, the alcohol,
agreeable, let's
right,
say.
The alcohol content in any kind of spirit has to be tempered by craftsmanship and creating the spirit. Anybody can make a high alcohol content spirit. There's a distillery called Brooklady, and it looks nothing like that if you see it written out, in Scotland. And they have found recipes there from more than a century ago from the original distillers at that particular facility that have phenomenally powerful alcohol content, 75 proof, which means, you know, it's or sorry, 150 proof, which means 75% alcohol. That'll knock your socks off. But they still make it taste good. But their whole logic, and I featured them in my book that came out a couple of years ago.
Barrels and Drams.
You remember. How sweet of you.
Yeah.
They said, we did this because we want to preserve history and because we can. Mm. And that's it. But
isn't there a law of diminishing returns with regard to increasing proof?
Yes.
As far as taste goes?
Yes. Almost, I mentioned before, the individual chemistry comes into play. Well, the individual tolerance comes into play as well. If you're going to be foolish enough to drink alcoholic beverages for the sake of getting high, I have no sympathy for you.
Yeah.
So, you know, drink garbage if you want. But other things, you just temper the amount you use.
So you had a second crack at the Cuddy's Ark there, Ray. What did you
think? I'm still not crazy about it. But then again, I like single malts more in general.
Yeah.
And I think it has a harsh taste to it.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was 100 proof until Bill just said that. But it's got a harshness to it. It's got an edge that if I'm going to drink a nice scotch, I don't need the edge.
Well, that's why there's so many types of whiskeys. There are so many types of whiskeys within the whiskey divisions. I noticed that some people, maybe even here on the premises, keep going back to the moonshine I brought.
Yeah. It's very good.
It is very good.
Which glass was that?
You want to try that one?
Yeah, one more little taste.
You can rinse out your glass with that.
I don't think any germs.
No, I don't think any germs are going to survive on the transfer of this. Well, it's a wonderful way of celebrating St. Patrick's Day. I would like to note for those of you who keep track of such things that the 19th of March is St. Joseph's Day. So feel free to come back, Bill, and we'll tackle that one.
If I come back without my little shopping bag, I have a feeling I'll be turned away at the door.
Exactly. We don't need you anymore.
That's right. We've had our way with you. Go away with
you. Yes.
It is, I've heard this. Let's end with this, which is I've been talking to a lot of craft brewers lately, and we've seen this craft brewing movement just explode. They have said, and beer writers from around the world have said, that some of the finest beer that is being produced is being not only produced in this country, but is being produced in the Northeast. Geographically, is that still the case? Is that the case for spirits as well?
Well, that's a little difficult because there are so many craft distilleries popping up around the country.
Yeah.
And New York didn't have any to speak of until Tuttletown Spirits down in Ulster County opened maybe 10 years ago. Since then, it's just exploded, the number of distilleries. And that occurs all around the country. The Northeast does seem to have some kind of growing reputation, but so does Colorado, for example, where there are quite a few craft distillers there and brewers as well. So it's a little tough to say in a country our size. In a country the size of Scotland or Ireland or whatever, they're small countries, so you can spot a region that is head and shoulders above anything else.
So let me say this then, which is that it is very possible to buy a local and get an extremely good spirit.
Oh, definitely. You can get it. Albany Distilling, for example, with its Ironweed line of spirits, is really good stuff. I prefer to use their things in a mix because they're kind of young.
Right.
But they're pretty good. And that's pretty much a two-man operation. So you don't need a whole lot of people because of technology now. That makes a big difference, too. You have to use smart, dedicated people.
Well, Bill Dowd is a spirits writer and spirits expert. He writes a blog for the Times Union, which you can find online at timesunion.com. Mm-hmm. Dowd on Drinks, D-O-W-D, Dowd on Drinks. And you actually do it quite frequently.
Oh, I do. I write about food frequently. I write about alcohol frequently. I love to write about those things, and it's a lot of fun to test them.
Yeah, it is.
Let's put it that way.
I'll give you that.
Yeah.
Thanks for the hooch, Bill. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
You know, we found out, just a little bit of history here, but we found out today that our good friend Mike Spain, who associate editor of
he
the
succeeded
of the Times
me as associate
Union,
editor of the
you
GO.
Hired him.
That's right, I did.
Amazing.
And he took over.
He took over my job when I retired. Yeah.
And yet Mike wanted no part of joining us.
No, we asked him if he wanted to stick around, and he said, no, I've already gone out for drinks with Bill.
Yeah, Mike is not much of a drinker, even though he is Irish. So destroying a stereotype.
Oh, well, we'll try to keep that one alive between the two of us.
Yeah.
Bill Dowd, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure, as always.
Ray, thank you for helping me with this segment. I really appreciate it.
I do what I can.
Yeah, I know you do. We will return and wrap up this program right after this short break.